We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
You know, Hub, I think you hit a great point there.
Hub Arkish.
The Arkish family in pro football media journalism has been around almost as long as the game itself.
670 The Score's NFL Insider.
This is probably not all that interesting to anybody but us in the media, but James Daniels looks bigger in the ass and the thighs again.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
They've started dabbing again, and you know, so they're still not shaking hands, but they progressed past, you know, bumping elbows, and you know, that part of it worried me a little bit.
Dapping. Dab is a very aggressive way where you could smoke some marijuana.
I thank you for enlightening this boomer. I actually knew what neither one meant, so I appreciate
it. Okay, yeah. Hub, I would dab or dap with you any day, socially distancing responsibility, of course.
Hub Arkish, that's getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
Each and every Tuesday at 4 o'clock, we talk to Hub Arkish. In football season, out of football season, it's always football season. Rami what's your last name? Makloff, sorry.
Makloff, that's all right.
Yeah, I knew I was going to. I'm writing it out and putting it on a big post-it note in front of me. I'm not calling you Rami Malek. I'm not going to do it. Rami
when you grow
Makloff.
Up with this name, Danny, it gets messed up a lot, like since the first day of school. So it's
dude,
all good, man.
But I don't want to do that to you. I'm a professional speaker, orator, allegedly. I should be able to pronounce your name.
So this is really more about you than it is about you. Just want to make yourself feel good that you can say my name, then get it right for me or my purposes.
Yeah, I don't care about you. No.
All right. It's
about me.
Just want to clear that up. All right.
Are you familiar with the name of the show?
Yes.
Do I need to? No,
yes,
okay.
Yes, I am.
I'm thrilled that Rami, what's his name, is here. As I am with Hub Arkish, he's a part of the Bet Rivers pregame show presented by Mail Medical with Hub, Olin, and Pat Manley. And then it's the Prop Swap postgame show presented by PNC Bank with Hub and Pat Manley. And this segment with Hub brought to you by Prop Swap. What's up, Hub?
Nothing much, Danny. What's up with you?
Oh man, there's so much football news to get to. Let's start with Dak Prescott. What percent chance do you think Dak Prescott, his long-term future is not in Dallas? Let's start there.
You know, I think it's 50-50 at this point, to be honest with you. I wish
really?
I had a better. Yeah, I mean, I think he's one of the most overrated quarterbacks in football to start with. But, you know, the Cowboys, who apparently agree to some extent, because it wouldn't have been that hard to work out a contract if they had wanted to, instead chose to franchise him. But now that they've franchised him and tortured their cap a little bit with that amount this year that he's going to receive every penny of and have no claim on him next year except to franchise him at a more expensive level when the cap is being reduced by at least 10%, leaves them in an extremely difficult position. The flip side of that, though, is that as bad as they are right now, it's on defense. I mean, they're in first place in their division. They're not going to be in the Trevor Lawrence Derby. Andy Dalton is certainly not the answer. He may be fine as a backup, but it's not like suddenly he's going to be the Jim Plunkett of the Dallas Cowboys. So, you know, I think Jerry Jones finds himself between a rock and a hard place. And so this could be a bit of a wake-up call for Prescott and his representation. And it may be time to approach the Cowboys with more of a hometown discount and a different offer and see what they say. Nothing's going to happen right now, but come the spring, that's probably the wise way to go. You know, I think that Dak Prescott has to realize he's already cashing about $37 million for this year. That can be viewed as part of the bonus since he's not going to play for it anyway. And so now if he's got to take a little bit of a lesser deal and he's only, emphasis on only, guaranteed $60 or $70 million, you know, I don't think that's the end of the world. So I think there's a chance that they work something out, but it's certainly not guaranteed by any means.
Hub, I've heard the notion that the Cowboys have to take care of Dak Prescott, have to do right by him, or it's going to look bad around the league, given the way the contract negotiations went, and then he suffers the gruesome injury on Sunday. Do players just expect teams to be cutthroat, or does it reflect badly on the Cowboys if they don't do right by Dak Prescott here?
You know, I mean, I think that sometimes we as fans and we as media overreact to this stuff. Players have a pretty good sense that this is a business, and it's the business that they chose, and they understand how a lot of this works. Now, they get unhappy with some of it when they feel somebody is being treated unfairly, but they're not stupid, and they do know that it's not like the Cowboys refused to work out a deal with him or make an offer. He just didn't like the offer they made him, and so now the injury risk is a part of it. I look at situations like this, and I continue to be absolutely baffled by what's going on between the Chicago Bears and Allen Robinson. But these are the situations that you end up with. And I don't think the majority of NFL players are going to feel like he was necessarily treated badly. Both sides are big boys. They made decisions. Prescott rolled the dice, and he appears to have lost on this one.
Jeremy Fowler from ESPN quoted an NFL executive as saying, if Dak Prescott hit free agency, the two best landing spots for him would be Indianapolis and Chicago. Now, Indy, when they move on from Phillip Rivers and Jacoby Brissett, will have north of $50 million in cap space for next year, and the Bears are going to be nowhere close to that. Do you think there's any chance in hell Dak would be a Bear?
Well, Danny, here's the problem. Whether it's Dak Prescott or Allen Robinson or anybody else we're talking about, as I just said, and I'm not breaking news here, the cap is going down for the first time in 12 years, and it's going down by $20 million. That's not official yet, but I can tell you that's what's going to happen. There are almost no teams in the league right now with $20 million of cap space next year based on players that are under contract. There's some. You look at the bottom of the barrel, and the Indianapolis Colts in particular have kept themselves in very good cap space, but the Bears aren't going to be there, and not with the escalators they've got in the Khalil Mack deal and the Robert Quinn deal and a few other deals on the table. But I come back to what I said right off the top. I personally believe Dak Prescott's one of the most overrated quarterbacks in the league. And I think when you look at the success the Cowboys have had since they've gotten, since he got there, how much of it has been with Zeke Elliott and how much of it has been without Zeke Elliott. And so now, if you're Indianapolis or Chicago, do you have a running game to support that? Do you have star power at wide receiver? You know, like an Amari Cooper, like Michael Gallup is becoming, like a CeeDee Lamb might be. I don't think you break the bank for Dak Prescott. So, you know, whether or not they'd be nice landing places is fine if you believe he's a franchise quarterback, and I just don't see that.
Does what you said about the salary cap situation preclude any Matt Ryan talk from moving forward? We've heard rumblings that he may now be available for a first-round pick, and the Falcons may be shopping him around.
Well, it's a different deal because as a will-then-be 36-year-old quarterback, you know, you're probably talking about a big annual hit, but you do a long-term deal. You spread it out on the back end. You don't take as big a hit now, and you have no intentions of honoring the back end of it. So there's different ways to structure that as opposed to a quarterback who's just coming into his prime. Now, that said, you know, I think people are going to look very carefully in another 7-8 weeks as to what happened with the Bucs. You know, Tom Brady, they're 3-2 right now, and they're not special. We just saw that Thursday night. He is still a very good quarterback, but put some pressure on him, and you know it's not the old Tom Brady with the Patriots. So you look at what's going on with Phillip Rivers with the Colts. Why next year is a 36-year-old Ryan going to be better than a 39-year-old Rivers? So I don't know. You know, I do know that if I am the next coach and GM of the Falcons, I want Matt Ryan to stick around for a couple years, because he was playing at an exceptionally high level the first few weeks until everything started going wrong with that team.
Hub Arkish is our guest. He's the host of the Bet Rivers pregame show presented by Mayo Medical with Olin Kreutz and Pat Manley. Speaking of a guy like Olin, offensive line, Hub, with James Daniels, did the Bears lose their best offensive lineman for the season?
You know, Danny, they lost the guy with the highest ceiling. You know, you're talking about what is a below-average offensive line looking to improve right now. And James Daniels is the guy who was growing the most and had the most room to grow, probably has the most star potential of that group. Best offensive lineman? Jermaine Ifedi's playing pretty well. You know, he's not pass protecting all that well. Cody Whitehair's fine. He hasn't been as good as he was a couple years ago, but he hasn't been awful. Their problems have been at the tackles, and specifically at left tackle, and there doesn't appear to be any answers there. And you know, I don't think that, you know, certainly James Daniels wasn't going to be the answer. What's interesting is the assumption was, since Rashad Coward has not taken a rep at guard in practice or training camp since it opened, they originally wanted him to be a right tackle. That's where they moved him back this year, as soon as they plugged James Daniels into a permanent home at guard, which, you know, we've talked about this. I still think it's a mistake. I think Daniels, you know, ceiling is much higher at center, and I think Whitehair's ceiling is probably higher at guard. They're smarter than me. You know, they're lifetime football people. That's what they decided. But now we hear from Juan Castillo today that they're thinking about letting Alex Bars and Rashad Coward compete for Daniels' spot. I personally, again, I think that's a big mistake. Alex Bars, while he had some left tackle experience early at Notre Dame, would have been a day one or day two draft pick last year had he not torn his ACL week four of the Notre Dame season, or actually 2 years ago. He was on the practice squad last year. And you know, I think probably projects a lot better than your converted defensive lineman and Rashad Coward, who didn't develop real quickly playing at right guard last year. So my guess is that Bars should win that competition if it's a real competition. I don't know how much of a drop-off there'll be. You know, he's got more experience at the position, honestly, you know, at least big-time college football than Daniels had. So that may not be the issue so much as the conversation with Juan Castillo today, just beyond frustrating. And listen, these coaches can't come out and tell you the truth. They're not talented enough. You know, you can spin it all you want. You can talk about details. You can talk about scheme. You can talk about everything else. They don't have good enough players on the offensive line right now. And I, you know, I take no joy in saying that. I mean, got a lot of guys who can be average, a lot of guys who would work with other units where they had better talent around them, but they don't have the one or two guys that you build an offensive line around.
Hub, Danny and I were talking just shortly before we brought you on about how does this team move the football on the ground, especially going to Nick Foles over Mitchell Trubisky at the quarterback position and the stature that he is, 29th in carries per game, 17th in yards per rush. When you watch the tape, is Matt Nagy, is that just a choice for him not to run the football very much, or is this a case of him trying to take what the defenses give him?
You know, I think it's all of the above. We do have to remember that in three of their four wins, they were down double digits. And no matter who you are, the natural instinct is to try and throw your way back into that game. What's interesting is that to Nagy's credit, he didn't do that in the first two against the, well, they weren't down double digits against the Giants. But when he got down against the Lions, he stayed with it. In Atlanta, they stayed with it, but it didn't work very well. And then in Indy and in Tampa, they just gave it up. But you do have two of the, I think, top four run defenses in the league in Indy and Tampa. So Indianapolis. And so there is some explanation for that. He's got to stay with it. And actually, all you got to look at is the example of the Colts against the Bears, winning that game 19-11. Colts ran the ball 38 times, even though they only averaged 2.7 yards a pop. And so it's not so much that they've got to improve that. You want to improve everything, but it's not so much that you've got to improve the average yards per carry. You got to stay with it. You got to stay balanced enough to keep them honest so that they can't, you know, double Allen Robinson or play them high-low and bracket over them and take, you know, one of your two tight ends away. I mean, defenses are doing things that against the Bears that they can't do against other offenses because they're not afraid the Bears will beat them on the ground. If they don't at least play defense against the run, then, you know, the Bears can beat them on the ground. They don't have to be great blocking it. So it's about scheme. It's about figuring it out. You know, Nagy talked about self-scouting all weekend, and I asked him about that yesterday morning. And I think what they're discovering is that not only do they have to stay with the run, but they can't do so much of it in 12 and 13 personnel. They've got to get back to situations where they have two, three, and even four wide receivers on the field if they want to threaten other defenses with big plays and start to open up the field and back them off the line a little bit.
So, Hub, this week the Bears are playing the, I believe I have this correct, I'm doing this on the fly just to confirm, yes, the 25th ranked DVOA defense in the NFL, in the Carolina Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
That is a drastic difference from what we saw from Nick Foles, right? Nick Foles against Atlanta, one of the worst defenses in the NFL, looked great. Indy and Tampa are some of the best defenses in the NFL. I, again, will do this on the fly because I'm unprofessional and I should have had this before I asked the question. But in terms of DVOA, Number one, Indianapolis. Number two, Tampa Bay. So Nick Foles literally has played the two best defenses in the NFL, if you believe in DVOA rankings. Now he's playing the 25th best. What do you expect from the Bears' offense? Extra time to prepare, worse defense than Nick Foles has faced since he's been a Bear.
Yeah, I'm not disputing the rankings so much as I'm not sure. You know, Tampa actually was not that great against the pass. They came in ranked outstanding against the run. You knew there were some problems in that secondary, and they found just enough, you know, soft spots to exploit them. But your point is right on. I mean, they're two of the better defenses in the league. Now you're taking a step back. You look at the way Carolina has won their three games. They've gotten into shootouts with some teams. They've outscored them. But certainly in terms of the Bears' offense, this should allow them to get a little healthier. You know, Carolina, it's not that they're not talented or good on defense. They're young and rebuilding, and that's kind of the remarkable part about Matt Rhule having them at 3-2 right now. But I think this is an opportunity for them to do exactly what I just said, which is to go back to that running game and play it straight up. Try and run the football by a commitment to it without adding extra tight ends, which takes you out of some of your passing situations, which makes your play action less effective, and get back to some of the basic things that you hope to do at the start of the season. I kind of think, and I'm just reading into Nagy's body language now, but I kind of think what's happened here is that they had a real clear plan on opening day in Detroit. And then they started reacting in Detroit, and when it almost got away with the Giants, then they got so far behind in Atlanta. And I think they're just way out of sync right now, and they're just not doing some of the basic things that he wants to do in his offense. One thing they did get to against Tampa, which was very effective, is they targeted David Montgomery seven times in the passing game. He had not been targeted more than three times before. It's one of the reasons we were told they drafted him, because he is, you know, that dual threat type receiver that you need in this offense. So you want to do some more of that. You got to get some more wide receivers on the field. You can rave about your tight ends all you want. The fact is, Jimmy Graham is a really nice addition in the red zone. He's not troubling anybody between the 20-yard lines. And so far, Harris and Kmet have been non-factors. So you've got to have situations where, you know, just Darnell Mooney and Allen Robinson isn't enough. You got to put Anthony Miller out there with him, put Javon Wims out there with him, start to you know, threaten these defenses a little bit more. And I think that's probably what they'll do against Carolina. And if they do, the other problem, guys, is that there's so much focus on the run game. The pass protection from this line has been worse than the run blocking. The pass protection hasn't been good in any of their five games. And so if they can just give Foles an extra half a second to a second, and if they can make the defense play it straight, then I think they'll have some success against Carolina.
On the other side of the ball, and look, can't complain much about the defense. It's a big part of the reason why they're sitting here at 4-1. But one name I'd like to hear more, Hub, when I'm watching the game on a Sunday afternoon, is that of Robert Quinn. Is he making more of an impact than it might appear to the naked eye when we're sitting on our couch watching on a Sunday?
He is. You know, Rami, when you go back and watch the tape, I mean, he's had his share of pressures, and they matter. I don't think they matter as much as some coaches want to argue. You know, this whole thing about changing the eye level and all that, that's all good stuff. You want to put the quarterback on his butt, obviously. He has not been himself. He has not been the player that he was in Dallas last year. But he has shown in spurts that it's still there. And I think we're just kind of waiting for it all to come together. And it really did in the second half. That was the best half of football the Bears defense has played, the second half against the Bucks. They started to look like that dominant defense. They created the takeaway late in the first half, and made some big plays. So I think Quinn has not played to what they brought him in to do, but I think he has shown enough to suggest that it's still there, and that hopefully this week, next week, that's all going to get uncorked.
Hub, who's the best team in the NFC?
Wow. I think at this point it's pretty clearly the Packers, even though I don't trust their defense, and I don't know that they will be the best team in a couple weeks. But I don't know how you argue with it. I after last night, the Saints just aren't that good a football team. I don't know what happened there, you know, because most of the talent is still there. Your all-pro wide receiver is on the bench for punching teammates. But other than that,
That's big. I want to see them with Michael Thomas to see if they really suck. I don't get it.
I agree. And Michael Thomas hasn't played since week one, but Michael Thomas doesn't play defense. And you know, it's not like the Saints offense, the three games they've won is because they've still scored enough points. And so they're certainly not the team, you know, that I thought they were going to be. The 49ers have got real issues right now. You know, there's nobody in the East that you're going to talk about. The Rams, I was very impressed by until the defense kind of came apart in Buffalo, and now they've been kind of slugging it out a little bit. And then I come to Seattle, you know, and so until somebody beats Seattle, they're in the conversation with the Packers. But, man, that defense is worse than the Packers. So that's why, you know, guys, when we look at a team like the Bears, there's no way to sugarcoat it. They don't deserve to be 4-1. You know, I mean, best case, 3-2, probably should be 2-3. But they're 4-1, you know, and they played their best half of football the last time we saw them on the field, and they're now getting to a more challenging part of the schedule, which is after the Panthers, you're going to go Saints, Rams, Titans, assuming the Titans, who knows what's going to happen there. Then you're going to get a Vikings team that seems to be finding itself, and then you get the Packers. And that's not as daunting as you'd expect in prior seasons, but that's the murderer's row right now, you know, and so if they just go 500, they're still in a position to, and probably could even be favored to win 11 or 12 games. And if they keep improving each week, you don't know what's going to happen. Now, I have no great faith at the moment in what this offense is going to do because we just haven't seen it. But I do think the defense is going to keep getting better. And so that's why the Bears are not in the conversation of who's the best team in the NFC right now. But you can't really eliminate them from the conversation of being a threat late in the season based on the way that the conference has come back to them.
Hub Arkish, he'll be doing Bears pre, he'll be doing Bears post. Prop Swap postgame show presented by PNC Bank with Hub and Pat Manley. Hub, as always, thank you.
Guys, thank you. Have a good day.
There is Hub Arkish. Man, I really butchered that DVOA question, Rami. That was
I don't think
sloppy.
You butchered it. I mean, at the end, you got all the info, right? It was just you didn't have the info at your fingertips.
Yeah, well, I had...
Like so a professional would.
Exactly. That's really the problem. It's like,
right.
I could take the reservation. I just couldn't hold the reservation. So just to reiterate the point, because I made it so damn sloppy to Hub. If you subscribe to some of the advanced analytics, like DVOA to football is kind of, this is very loose, it's kind of like WAR to baseball,
right,
in the
yeah.
sense that it's like they factor in a bunch of other factors. It's analytically based. It's weighted for opponent and home and away, and it's this whole like equation over at Football Outsiders. And so they have rankings for pass defense, rush defense, pass offense, rush offense, overall defense, overall offense, that sort of thing.
Three technique. It's something. It's a newer type of situation.
That's exactly right. So if you don't understand what it is, it doesn't just think of it as a it's an analytics tool that the guys over at Football Outsiders have put together. Tampa Bay has the best defense in the NFL, according to that. Indy has the second best. Carolina, the Bears' opponent this week, is 25th in the NFL.
So excuses for Nick Foles and the offense here. They should be able to put up yards and points against this defense on Sunday.
Exactly. And the Panthers played Sunday. The Bears played Thursday. So it's extra rest.
Yep.
It's extra time to prep for this team. And as someone, me, who has said, hey, the Bears offense will be better with Nick Foles than Mitch Trubisky, not because Nick Foles is so much better than Mitch Trubisky, but just because he knows the system better. He's better between the ears
sure.
for Matt Nagy's system. That had been my premise the entire time. And then against Tampa and Indy, you didn't see it, right? Against Indy, they have 3 points before garbage time. In Tampa, it's just this like ugly game, and it's just a slop fest all over the field. Everyone's been inundating me with like, hey, they suck. He still sucks. It's the same thing. Mitch can do this. And all I'm saying is he played a different level of competition. I never said he was great. Now, let's go.
Like, so after this Sunday, if things don't look great this Sunday for the Bears offense, are you willing to start opening your mind up to the possibility that maybe this offense does still suck, even with Nick Foles or whoever is going to be under center?
Yeah, I will be much more concerned. I will be much more concerned if they don't play well this Sunday. I expect multiple touchdowns. I expect them to be able to move the ball on the ground and through the air. Like, they should be able to do what they want against the Panthers. Now, again, all I'm saying is the Bears can be a league average offense with Nick Foles, because Nick Foles is not good.
Right.
So just 24 points on offense, 27 points on offense. Like, to just move the ball, don't look dominated, be able to run, be able to pass.
I hope you're right.
Score in the mid-20s.
I hope they can at least make a couple of drives, two or three drives, look effortless. Just move down the field against a bad defense and put 3 or 7 points up on the board. I'm not as confident as you are, because I don't have all that much faith in Matt Nagy as an offensive mind. But if it is what you're saying it is, if they can be an average offense with Nick Foles at offense and Matt Nagy calling the plays, we should see it this Sunday. There are no excuses for us not to see it this Sunday, Danny.
Yes, I think that that's where I'm at anyway, and to me that's the storyline of Bears and Panthers. There was an awkward media interaction after a big playoff game last night, and oh man, Rami, I live for these. I haven't heard it.
I love awkward moments.
They are just the best, and I specialize in them between 2 and 6. We'll hear one next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Score.
Another 0-2. Back to Melanson. Over him to the shortstop, Swanson. Braves take game one. A final of 5-1. The starter Freed, outstanding. They popped 3 home runs. The go-ahead shot, Austin Riley, in the top of the ninth.
Joe Buck with the call on Fox. The Dodgers fell down 1-0 in the NLCS, and Walker Buehler had a rough go of it. Now Clayton Kershaw has been scratched from game 2, so all of a sudden the juggernaut LA Dodgers in a little bit of trouble in the NLCS, and we'll get to some White Sox stuff here in just a second as Bob Nightingale continues to Bob Nightingale all over himself. But Rami, I had a family dinner last night, and so I was kind of away from the sports happenings, and even as I was following the sports, I was certainly off of social media, which is rare for me. Were you aware that Walker Buehler's pants were trending on social media? Were you aware of this phenomenon?
I was watching the Monday Night Football game last night because I had some fantasy football implications that I had to watch for. But I was on social media and saw Walker Buehler's pants trending and had no idea why. So I switched over to the game and I was like, wow, those are some super tight pants, man. And they seemed to get tighter as the game went on. I don't know if he changed pants in between innings. I don't know if it was like blood flow to the legs. I don't know what was going on, but those pants were tight to start and seemed to only get tighter as the evening went on.
So, you know, my wife notices some good baseball pants situations. Mm-hmm. Like she's a fan. It's one of the things that she enjoys about baseball, and I can't knock it. Can't shame it. They're in good shape. They
sure.
Good tone. Certainly better than me, who's just like flat like a piece of paper top to bottom. But so, you know, I didn't know. Tanny, were you watching the game? Did you notice Walker Buehler's pants? Were they noticeably tight for baseball pants? Because I feel like all baseball pants are kind of tight.
They are tight, but these were really tight.
Sprayed on.
Yeah. Like some of your Lululemon pants that you rock on occasion, you know?
I love Lululemon pants. I will, you know.
Like
me,
the yoga pants? Like the elastic yoga pants?
Well, no, I don't.
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely.
All right. No, that's what Tanny claims. That is not what they are. I'm wearing some like joggers, like some sweatpants.
See,
right,
I didn't
now.
Know Lululemon made those. I thought they only made the yoga style stretch pants.
Yep, they do, Rami. Actually, they do. He just gets them a little bit larger.
These guys are lying on me.
He's a growing boy. He hopes to fit in them someday.
They have these pants that look like dress pants, but they feel like sweatpants.
I've seen those. I didn't know Lululemon made them, but I've seen those, and I'm intrigued.
Danny, why did you take off your infinity scarf for today's Twitch stream?
Yeah, I'm basic. I got a pumpkin spice latte over here. I'm ready to go. Okay, I understand, but they're amazing pants. They're just very expensive. I got a couple pairs. I'm looking forward to getting more. But so not the point. The point is Walker Buehler apparently had some tight pants last night. But you know, this is the NLCS. This is a big deal. So that's fine for social media. But apparently, a reporter decided in the post game press conference after Walker Buehler blew game one that it was a good time to ask him about his pant tightness.
I can go deeper. I can be better. So, you know, looking at it that way is never going to change for me.
Next question is from Michael Duarte. Go ahead.
Hey, Walker. Walker Buehler's pants were trending on Twitter tonight. Looked like they were a little bit
time or place, Michael.
Thank you, Walker.
Shut that down real quick. He was not having that. Didn't want to talk about the pants.
Oh my God. Can I hear that? I want to hear it again because he knew the guy? Like, that's a longtime beat reporter.
It sounds like it, yeah.
Who's asking the question? Dude, read the room. Like the Dodgers are.
I can go deeper. I can be better. So, you know, looking at it that way is never going to change for me.
Next question is from Michael Duarte. Go ahead.
Hey, Walker. Walker Buehler's pants were trending on Twitter tonight. Looked like they were a little bit
time or place, Michael.
Thank you, Walker.
Whew. I like it.
Duarte.
This goes back to what we were saying before about you and I just wanting the highest entertainment value from our sports figures. I want highest entertainment value from my reporters, too. That's like somebody from the Howard Stern show running into the Michael Wiener press conference and asking him if that picture was accurate or if there were enhancements. You know what I mean? Like, I love that kind of stuff, man. Kudos to that guy who asked the question. I love it.
I do, too. So I just looked him up. Michael Duarte on Twitter.
Award-winning journalist Michael Duarte to you.
Yeah, Michael J. Duarte takes himself very seriously. Award-winning journalist, current writer and reporter for NBC LA, covering Dodgers, Lakers, Rams, and other LA teams. Born and raised in LA, passion and art. Now, I'm with you, though, Rami, because I think that sometimes, mainly all the time, these teams and a lot of reporters act as if we're operating within, like, a cathedral of sports.
Right, yeah.
Right? And they
none of this matters.
None of it matters.
None of this matters.
Okay, you and I are in complete lockstep agreement. And I love doing things and just kind of being like a little bit of an anarchist and who could poke fun at the seriousness of it all. So I am here for that question. I am with you. I will say there's not a lot of media getting on these Zoom calls. You know, like in COVID times, like that's not a Howard Stern guy. That isn't a sports
true.
Talk radio
yeah,
reporter.
That's true. Yeah.
I am a little surprised that someone who is a serious journalist, an award-winning journalist, just ask him, would ask that question after an NLCS game. I am a little, like, time and place, I am a little surprised because I can't imagine he thinks Walker Buehler is going to find that very funny. After
now
he
you know
lost.
Why he's an award winner. I think now we all know why he's got that, whatever that award is, he's got it up on the shelf.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know sports are quote unquote back, but they're not really back until you get the assembled media in a big room where they can ask these questions. Because a lot of times you get people that ask these questions just to get the reaction from the people in the room. And I think that's why NFL season has been pretty boring so far, because usually you don't, you know, have these coaches going off in post-game pressers and you don't have people feeding off each other's questions like in a live situation. But now I really like Michael J. Duarte there taking it next level and just having that reaction. He's just sitting there behind a computer by himself and he's totally cool with it.
Yeah, you said read the room, Danny. I think he read the room and saw that his fellow reporters would find that hilarious. I think he read the room perfectly.
Okay. I love it, though. So you and I are on the same page.
Absolutely.
We take sports way too seriously, and we need to remember that this is just a game and nothing matters.
For sure. Yeah, and I'm guilty of it from time to time, too. I throw stuff at my TV. I'm guilty of it. I know it. And then I go, you're an idiot. What are you doing? This doesn't matter. None of this matters.
Yeah, what was it, like a week ago, Tanny? You texted me so excited that you're like, Bernstein got sports mad. Like, it's fun. Like, when you lose perspective for a minute and you get sports mad and you act as if it's actually it matters. I think I've gotten sports mad, like real sports mad, like twice on the air in the last year. It's very rare for me. I like to be entertained. I hold the teams accountable, whatever the case may be. Have high standards for the teams when they deserve them. But yeah, it's very hard.
When the Sox started 1-4. And I'm like, you know, getting up in the morning and making the coffee angrily, slamming the crap into the coffee maker. And the wife's like, why are you so upset? Did the Sox lose last night? Yeah. And then you just realize, oh, God, I'm so stupid.
When the Cubs were down 3-1 in the World Series, there was nothing you could do to improve my mood on those days. Nothing. I'm sure it affected my day-to-day life when the Cubs were down 3-1 in the World Series. And I thought it was going to be yet another disappointment for me.
Yeah. When it was reported that Ryan Pace did not meet with Deshaun Watson, I got my blood pressure legitimately after the segment ended. Normally if I'm doing something like impassioned on the show and it ends, I'm like, oh man, that was a good segment, and then I just chill and wait for the commercial break to end.
And just carried over.
I was just keeping it going during the break. I'm like, who else can I tell about this? This is ridiculous. He didn't even take him out to dinner. There are only three quarterbacks. You only had dinner with two of them.
I heard that rant, by the way, and you were 100% right. That's unacceptable. That's inexcusable on Ryan Pace's part.
I save it for when I have a very justified target. But yeah, I love poking little holes in the cathedral that people build around their sports. Okay, Bob Nightingaling all over this White Sox managerial search, and this is hilarious. And I know, don't judge the headline. Oh, we're judging the headline next on The Score.
If you guys want to have Bob Nightingale on, you guys can certainly do that.
Breaking White Sox news. The Sox have named Tommy Huttebee as their new manager. Keep it on The Score for all the details surrounding this huge move by the Sox here on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What? Tommy Huttebee is the new coach of the White Sox? They call them managers in your game. Yeah, that's surprising. No, that's not what it is, but Big Voice Guy is prepared in case it happens. We also have Big Voice Guy liners ready to go on Alex Cora and AJ Hinch, but it sounds like Mitch Rosen should get back with our Big Voice Guy, Rami Makhlouf, because...
I was just going to say.
Yeah, Bob Nightingale not only says that... the White Sox are going to call and talk to Tony La Russa, but that he's the favorite. He's the front runner.
That's the guy.
He's the top choice. Opinion. This is an opinion column from Bob Nightingale.
Anything can happen. Something could happen. Not anything will happen.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. Believe it or not, Hall of Famer Tony La Russa could be the next White Sox manager. And then he goes on and to do his entire thing. And by the way, I called him 74 years old earlier. My apologies to Mr. La Russa. He's 76 years old.
Sold him short.
76. Tinfoil hat conspiracy theory time, okay? I know I'm not in the White Sox fandom club, but remember when they were trying to sign Zach Wheeler?
Yeah.
And, yeah. Tanny, you remember this when they leaked we made a higher bid on Wheeler when he went somewhere else. I was like, why would you do that? That's an odd thing to put out there just for damage control, because people on Twitter would think they were cheap and he chose somewhere else. We were willing to pay him more money. I was like, that's just, you don't need to do that. Just he signed somewhere else, move on, go get your next guy. They end up getting Dallas Keuchel. Everything ends up being fine. They're very concerned about Twitter. They're very concerned about public perception. Why would they use Bob Nightingale as their national mouthpiece, who we know is just a straight, he's like a P1. He's getting on the speed dial for Kenny Williams. Why would they feel the need to put Tony La Russa's name out there if it isn't, hey, at least it's not La Russa, so we hired A.J. Hinch? Because this column by Nightingale says if they can't get La Russa, expect them to go to A.J. Hinch. It's like they know that there's going to be blowback for Hinch because of the cheating scandal in Houston, so they want to soften the blow by saying at least it's not Tony La Russa. That's such a weird thing to do PR-wise.
How are those your top two candidates? Let's take Bob Nightingale seriously for a second here, if you could, Danny.
How are
those your two candidates? Those two guys are nowhere near each other on the spectrum of Major League Baseball managers who may be available right now for this job. How did you whittle it down to Tony La Russa? and AJ Hinch. Like, those aren't similar guys. You don't have two guys from the same mold there where you're like splitting hairs and going, yeah, I'd rather have this guy over that one. Those are two totally different people and two totally different managers in terms of their background and style, and Tony La Russa and AJ Hinch, that this doesn't even make sense on the surface. Does it? Yeah. Am I crazy?
No. You're. I mean, he's 30 years older than AJ Hinch.
Right.
He's 76 versus 46. Tanny, Shane, either of you guys want to defend this league? Because this is clearly a White Sox league.
There's no defending.
There's
no defending. My worry is, in the perception of AJ Hinch, you're looking at this like, well, they're trying to make it seem like I'm the second choice, that they know they're not going to get La Russa because La Russa won't do it. They're not going to choose La Russa. So, I guess we'll just go with AJ Hinch. How do you feel if you're AJ Hinch being the perceived second choice behind Tony La Russa? And how does Bob Nightingale sleep at night?
That last one is the best question.
Yeah, that's fair too. I know that I don't know this for 100% fact, but this is Kenny Williams, right? Like, why? Why would we do this? Cui bono, who benefits? My favorite
There's only one answer to why, and that's Jerry Reinsdorf. Doesn't he love Tony La Russa? Hasn't he said that he regrets letting Hawk Harrelson fire Tony La Russa?
Absolutely, yes.
Only answer to this. Like, if there's any truth or validity to this whatsoever, that's the only reasonable reason why there would be that Jerry Reinsdorf is intervening, is meddling, and is saying, hey, take a look at my guy Tony for me, would you?
Shep defending the old people, saying Jack McKeon won at 72 years old with the Marlins. Okay, fair. Tanny, you got a thought here? What's your team
no,
doing?
I don't have any. I don't know what this is. I don't know if this is just, Tony La Russa really wants to get back into our game, so let's get him back in the baseball subconscious. Like, he's interested in a job somewhere, so let's put it out there in the ether so maybe another team will, you know, get their radar up. I don't know. It makes no sense. Other than, you know, if you're Jerry Reinsdorf, and we all have regrets in our life, and letting Hawk Harrelson fire Tony La Russa, Dave Duncan, Jim Leland, certainly they would be on my list of regrets as I got older. So I get that part of it, but I don't see how you can have the two of those guys be, like we said, the total opposite ends of the spectrum. Like, a guy who's been out of the game for a decade, at least as far as a managerial role, and a guy who just won a World Series title and who was 30-something years younger. It doesn't make sense. I don't get the end game here. I hate doing this, but I tend to agree with Danny that I think this is just a soft landing for AJ Hinch. I hope that's what it is at this point. But look, Tony La Russa is a Hall of Famer, but not for this team, man. You know, like, maybe if you had a veteran team, maybe you could sell it, but not for this team. I don't understand it.
This column is insane.
Stop calling it a column.
I can't get it to open
on
my computer for some reason.
It's not a column. It's a blog.
You get spyware on your computer if you open that column.
But you're right. Like, when people were staying in hotels, this would be on the, you know, outside of your door every morning at USA Today. It's on newsstands in airports, and people aren't traveling, so I'm sure USA Today is hurt. But, like, I think the best candidate, he quotes Rick Hahn about, you know, the best candidate is going to be someone who has experience with a championship organization in recent years, recent October experience with a championship organization, end quote. And then Nightingale writes, yes, that's Tony La Russa.
Huh?
His next sentence is, or if there's a change of heart, that's Hinch. Did I miss the recent championship for Tony La Russa?
I mean,
what
if
is
you
he
did,
talking
I did
about?
Too, man. I don't know. I have no idea.
Does he mean Alex Cora? Like, oh, sorry, guys. I just meant Alex Cora this entire time. I don't know why I kept typing La Russa. I meant Alex Cora. Sorry, guys. Big misunderstanding.
It is so weird. He really positions this.
That's
like
crazy.
Like, AJ Hinch is the second choice to Tony La Russa. Like, it would be a nice fallback to AJ Hinch.
Well, 14 years is recent, right?
I mean, for Jerry Reinsdorf.
It's a century, yeah.
Like, Jerry Reinsdorf wants to hire a peer. La Russa's 76, Reinsdorf's 83.
He wants a dude he can go to early bird dinner with, man.
83.
What a weird story.
That's not real. That can't. And like I said, if it is real, that's just Jerry Reinsdorf asking them to take a look at La Russa for him. It can't be. This can't be a real thing.
Okay. I tend to agree with you, obviously. I don't trust Bob Nightingale more than I could further than I can throw him. But like, it's just, it's weird. This is a weird one. I always say, Rami, when I get banned from sports radio, like I'll get a job in like PR, crisis management, like spinning a narrative when something's going poorly for someone.
Yeah.
I just, why? Like what does this message accomplish for your team? I honestly don't get it. We're taking you up until Tuesday night football, Bills and Titans. You know, that historic Tuesday night football tradition. It's Rami Makhlouf in on the Danny Parkin Show on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.